Prime Time replay from Money FM 89.3.
Well, in a surprise development on Monday, an Indonesian woman accused of killing Mr. Kim Jong-nam, North Korean leader Kim Jong-un's half-brother, was freed and allowed to return home to Indonesia. And this comes after Malaysia's prosecutors dropped charges against Siti Aisyah 2 years after she and another Vietnamese woman, Don Ting Huang, were accused of smearing the deadly VX nerve agent on Mr. Kim's face at the Kuala Lumpur airport. Malaysia's Attorney General Tommy Thomas wrote in a letter to Indonesia that this move takes into account the good relations between the two countries. And meanwhile, Prime Minister Mahathir Mohamad denied that the Malaysian government had caved in to diplomatic pressure to do so. And joining us to tell us more is in this Asia Insider segment is Joshua Chambers, founder and managing editor of Singapore-based media startup Gulf Insider. Well, Joshua, what are your thoughts on this surprising development? It seems even Siti herself did not expect to be freed so quickly.
This is clearly a triumph of Indonesian diplomacy and a great win for the Jokowi administration in Indonesia. The government over the past few years has prioritized helping its foreign workers overseas, and this decision is clearly a vindication of that policy, and it comes right before a general election as well. So it really couldn't be better timing for the current Indonesian president.
Well, Joshua, it sounded like something out of a Hollywood movie. You know, the two women always denying murder, saying they believe they were taking part in a prank for a reality TV show. They were tricked by North Korean agents into killing Mr. Kim by smearing VX nerve agent on his face at KLIA. Even if they were tricked, they would have become unwitting accomplices. What implications do you think the case might cast on Malaysia's judicial system?
In legal terms, it's certainly unusual to release a person without stating that they're innocent or guilty and with clear evidence to prosecute them with. Ultimately, there was a lot of evidence that would suggest that they should be tried for committing crime, and they were certainly in some ways implicated in what has happened in the airport. So this does show that political pressure can play a role in Malaysia's judicial system. And we have to remember in Southeast Asia that there have been many cases where foreign governments have tried to play a role in judicial systems. Famously in Singapore, for example, there was Michael Fay in 1994 who was caned against the American government's wishes, but there was a great deal of pressure on Singapore from the Clinton administration to release him, even though there was evidence against him. So legally, it's a fascinating case. Whether it makes a long-term difference to Malaysia's legal system is another question. This appears to be a one-off decision. There's no suggestion there's a precedent. But it does suggest that you can place pressure on the Malaysian government and things will change.
And do you consider this outcome a diplomatic win for Malaysia, Indonesia and North Korea? What does Malaysia have to gain in acceding to Indonesia's request?
This certainly helps cement relations between two great ASEAN nations who do have other disputes over, for example, territory in Borneo. So helping Indonesia is no doubt a good thing for the Malaysian government. Ultimately, Indonesia is the big diplomatic winner here. The release of letters between the two countries' law ministers show how Indonesia could place pressure on its neighbour. So Malaysia helping is a politically savvy move, and really it loses very little from doing so. Public sentiment appeared to favour this lady. There was no one in Malaysia who was hotly calling for this individual to be strongly tried. It's hard to see what this achieves for North Korea. Perhaps it saves some embarrassment when gritty details in the case emerge, but North Korea and Malaysia were once close and they now still have a very testy relationship. While the Malaysian embassy has reopened in Pyongyang, the previous exchanges that existed between the two countries' civil services have completely east from what I understand.
Yeah, and of course they faced off on the football field, you know, a year or so ago as well. That was a very tricky one for everyone to organize. But what about Vietnam now? I mean, it's appealing to Malaysia to free Don, the Vietnamese woman that was involved. Do you think Malaysia will feel the pressure to do so, so that they appear fair to both Indonesia and Vietnam? Because it wasn't it in the hearing for Don that the Indonesian lady was actually released, even though the focus at that time was on the Vietnamese woman?
Well, this is a difficult one because I think Malaysia ultimately will feel pressure to do so. The problem with this case is we don't really know what's happened behind the scenes. When it comes to issues of national security, when it comes to issues of assassination, when there are clearly national security implications at play, it's difficult to know what were the underlying factors, what was the role of the Indonesian, what was the role of the Vietnamese lady involved. You would suspect from the outside that Malaysia would feel a lot of pressure to release the Vietnamese lady as well. It would be extremely strange to release one suspect and not another, and they would have to have extremely good evidence not to do so.
Okay. Well, Joshua, turning our attention now away from Malaysia to Brexit. I mean, British Prime Minister Theresa May suffered another major defeat after her improved Brexit deal, one that was brokered with the European Union at the last minute. UK lawmakers rejected her deal by 391 to 242 votes in yet another devastating blow to Mrs. May. In Jan, her deal was rejected by a resounding 230 votes. Well, the UK has just 16 days left before its divorce from the EU, and MPs are set to vote later tonight whether the UK should leave the European Union on March 29th without a deal. And if that fails, they will vote on whether to delay Brexit. Well, Mrs. May actually summarised the UK's problem right now quite well in a speech, where she said that voting against leaving without a deal and for an extension does not solve the problems they face, adding that EU will want to know what use they mean to make of such an extension. And what else is there delaying Brexit if the House of Commons does not look like it's anywhere close to coming to an agreement? What do you think?
Like many British people overseas, I'm watching this through my fingers, nervous about all of the potential outcomes. What use is there in delaying Brexit? Well, the current House of Commons may not look like it's anywhere close to coming to an agreement, but one of the potential outcomes is that there will be an election. And this would change the makeup of the House of Commons. Let's not forget that just after she activated the decision to leave the European Union in the first place and start the negotiations, Prime Minister May called a general election. Her belief was that she could win a large majority, and that would make her negotiations easier and avoid many of the problems that she's faced over the past few months. Of course, as history shows, it went the other way. She lost her majority, and it made her job far, far harder. So if the Brexit is delayed, there could very well be an election. Alternatively, there could very well be a second referendum. In this second referendum, either the British people would again say that they do not want to be a member of the European Union, and that would put greater impetus on going for a deal like the one that Theresa May has already secured. Or alternatively, as many left-wing MPs are hoping, they could change their mind and decide that they would remain within the European Union. And again, that would change the outcome. There's a lot of use in delaying Brexit, but we really have to see over the next 48 hours what happens in the House of Commons.
I mean, it's a complete mess, you know, because of the referendum. The UK voted on something without really knowing exactly what they were voting on. So do you actually think there could be a second referendum?
It's certainly a possibility. It's quite a high possibility. What happened in the past few weeks in the British Parliament is that a group of MPs from both the Labour opposition party and the Conservative governing party broke away and formed their own group campaigning specifically on this issue. Let's also not forget the majority of members of Parliament do not want to leave the European Union. The vast majority of them campaigned in the referendum for Britain to stay in the European Union. So you could see that this would be the easiest mechanism to win over the British people to the views of the members of Parliament. It's a very high likelihood, but alternatively, there's a vote on whether just to give up and leave altogether without a deal. There's a hard core of people within the British Parliament who want that. And public sentiment doesn't notably seem to have changed enough for many politicians to gamble and suggest that they're going to resign their seats, call for elections to ensure that Britain remains in the EU. It's all to play for at this stage.
Okay, Joshua, before we let you go, very quickly, MPs are set to vote later tonight on whether the UK should leave the EU on March 29th without a deal. And if that fails, they will vote on whether to delay Brexit. So what's your prediction of this outcome?
What a nightmare to predict the outcome. As we can see with the constantly fluctuating value of pound sterling, it's almost impossible to really know what's going to happen in this particular vote. And what a very difficult for the British Parliament to be deciding on such a major strategic issue in a couple of votes in the next 48 hours. I would suggest that the majority of MPs do not want to leave the European Union, and they certainly don't want to leave without a deal. Why? No deal would be very bad for the European Union as well. In a democratic system, people do not vote to harm their own country. So I don't think tonight the majority of MPs will vote to leave without a deal. That leaves two alternatives: delay and calling it off, or going for Theresa May's deal. The Prime Minister seems keen to win people over and to still go for her deal. Her deal also appears to be the middle ground. She could, with this renewed outcome, go back to the European Union and potentially pressure the EU to change the very arcane ruling that it's made on the border between Northern Ireland and the Republic of Ireland. They could say themselves that they're going to delay their decision on that to a later date to avoid the economic problems the EU is currently facing. I would suggest most likely, though, in my personal opinion, and I really have to say it's impossible to fully know, there will be a delay because people don't want Theresa May's deal. They have voted numerous times against it, and people don't want to leave without a deal. And that means they have to come together and decide how best to negotiate with the EU and what outcome they actually want to achieve in the first place from these negotiations.
As clear as mud. Many thanks to Joshua Chambers, founder and managing editor of Singapore-based media startup GovInsider, in our Asia Insider segment with all eyes on Brexit.
To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download the SBH radio app available on Google Play or the App Store.